Order. Roll call.
Roll call for Thursday, February 7th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here. Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting. Perkins excused. Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Ross.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Pastor Huck.
A couple of comments. I asked Senator Enzi not long ago how I could best pray for him, and he said that he learned to pray more for the person rather than the issues. This week, I've attempted to follow his advice and intercede for you as senators personally. As you may know, Senator Perkins' father-in-law passed last night. We certainly want to pray for him and his family. But also I've been praying for your personal courage, your stamina, your skills, as you've chased down the issues of our day that affect this state. Today I'd like to shift and pray for a prayer that I've prayed at our local church on several occasions, a prayer that several churches came together and we prayed in a public square at the depot. It's a prayer of intercession, of confessing sin of our country. It's a prayer that I've prayed at our nation's capital. It's a prayer that burdens my heart. It's born out of a personal fear of God. And it's a prayer that I would ask that you humbly join with me today. The verse I want to read is from Proverbs 6, 16 through 19. I'll read it, and then I'll pray it back to the Lord in agreement. There are six things the Lord hates, even seven that are detestable to Him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush to evil, a false witness who pour out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. Would you pray with me? Father in heaven, I stand before you today, as I have many days, and I ask you that you would forgive us of our sins. Lord, I know that our nation has sinned. Lord, it's with fear and trembling that I address you, your holiness today, from this institution of government here in our state Senate. Lord, I ask you that you would forgive the sins of our nation and of our people. Lord, I know that our sin is ever before you. I confess our sin of pride. Lord, we've gone our own way and not yours. Lord, of lies that we tell ourselves and we tell each other, of the lives of the innocent voices that we've extinguished, of the wicked schemes we've adopted as normal, of evil, of a false witness, and finally, of the huge chasm that divides our land. Father, forgive us, I pray. I pray that you wouldn't repay us for what we deserve, but that you would remember mercy. Lord, I pray that you hear this prayer today. Finally, Lord, I want to pray for Senator Perkins, for his family, as he's lost his father-in-law. I pray for comfort for that family. Just pray that he would sense your presence today. I pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.
Mr. Jeremy, in the Pledge of Allegiance,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading, correction, approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 6th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The doctor of the day is Christina Beringer from Cheyenne. And today we have two nurses of the day, Angela Lawrence and Natan Gama from Evanston. Thought for the day is from Abraham Lincoln. Be sure you put your feet in the right place, then stand firm. Messages from the House.
February the 6th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 58, Community Infrastructure Program Amendments 2, ayes 45, noes 15. House Bill number 102, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, ayes 60. House Bill number 129, Voting Rights, ayes 42, noes 18. House Bill number 224, State Minors Hospital Eligibility, ayes 47, noes 13. House Bill number 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1, Substitute number 1, ayes 44, noes 16. House Bill number 217, Atomic Energy Agreement State Study, ayes 52, noes 8. House Bill number 219, Campaign Finance Reporting, ayes 57, noes 3. House Bill number 228, Transfer of Federal Lands Study, ayes 44, noes 13, excused 3. House Bill number 237, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct, ayes 57, excused 3. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 6th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 221, State Government Fraud Reduction Act Reporting Requirements, ayes 59, noes 1. House Bill number 234, Home Energy Assistance Program, ayes 60. House Bill number 235, Firefighters License Plates, ayes 56, noes 3, conflict 1. House Bill number 259, State Elected Official Board Votes and Chairmanship, ayes 60. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. I believe this is the last batch of House bills.
Abigail.
House Bill 221, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 221, State Government Fraud Reduction Act Reporting Requirements, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to administration of government. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, noes 1.
House Bill 221 is referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 91, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1, sponsored by the Statewide Education Accountability Commission, an act relating to education accountability. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 44, noes 16.
House Bill 91 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 228, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 228, Transfer of Federal Land Study, sponsored by Representative Miller, an act relating to public lands. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 44, noes 3, excused 3.
House Bill 228 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 259, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 259, State Elected Officials Board Votes and Chairmanship, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act relating to boards and commissions. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 259 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 129, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 129, Voting Rights, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to voting rights. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 42, noes 18.
House Bill 129 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 219, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 219, Campaign Finance Reporting, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to elections. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 3.
House Bill 219 is referred to Committee Number 7, Appropriations. House Bill 237, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 237, Employment Insurance Worker Misconduct, sponsored by Representative Reeder, an act relating to unemployment insurance. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 237 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. With regard to House Bill 219, I've been advised that when I said it was Committee Number 7, I said Appropriations. That's actually Corporations. My bad. House Bill 235, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 235, Firefighter License Plates, sponsored by Representative Green, an act relating to motor vehicles. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 3, conflict 1.
House Bill 235 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 58, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 58, Community Infrastructure Program Amendments 2, sponsored by Representative Byrd, an act relating to economic development. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 45, noes 15.
House Bill 58 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 217, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 217, Atomic Energy Act Agreement State Study, sponsored by Representative Miller, an act relating to environmental quality. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 52, noes 8.
House Bill 217 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 102, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 102, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to emergency detention and involuntary hospitalization proceedings. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 102 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 224, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 224, State Miners Hospital eligibility, sponsored by Representative Miller, an act relating to the State Miners Hospital. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 47, noes 13.
House Bill 224 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, and House Bill 234, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 234, Home Energy Assistance Program, sponsored by Representative Green, an act relating to public assistance and social services. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 234 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, barring objection, I would request that House Bill 153, Representation of Children in Compact Proceedings, House Bill 154, Representation of Children in Chins, and House Bill 190, Public Defender Fee Schedule and Indigency Standards, be re-referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Culture, Children, Public Defender, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Without objection, House Bill 153, House Bill 154, and House Bill 190 will be re-referred to Committee Number 6. I was going to think of something smart to say, but I just can't.
He said them all.
The road recreation and children.
Travel, recreation, and wildlife. Okay. Reports from standing committees.
February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 127 in gross, driver's licenses, veterans designation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 68, engrossed, Life Resource Center, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 158, engrossed, Vehicle Registration Timing, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, and Landon. Noes, Senators Schiffer and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 152, engrossed, Vehicle Accident Reporting, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 150, Bonds for Certificates of Title. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
House Bill 54, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 54, High School Equivalency Certificate.
House Bill 54 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be heard read a third time. Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 59, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 59, Banking Act Amendments.
House Bill 59, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 60, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 60, Money Transmitters Act Amendments.
House Bill 60, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 61, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 61, Banking Division, Nationwide Licensing System.
House Bill 61, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 64, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemption.
House Bill 64, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the following bills on third-party consent or third-party pleading. Just sort of flow out. We're talking about litigation. On third consent list, the first one is House Bill 4, Brands. Second one is House Bill 12, Contagious and Infectious Disease Among Livestock. And House Bill 17, School Cap Construction and Enrollment Methodology. And House Bill 38, Use of Water Outside the State.
Would any member of the Senate like any of those bills removed from the consent list? Seeing none. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 4, Brands. House Bill 12, Contagious and Infectious Diseases Among Livestock. House Bill 17, School Capital Construction Enrollment Methodology. And House Bill 38, Use of Water Outside the State. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns. Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins excused, Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 4, 29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 12, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 12, 29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 17, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 17, 29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 38, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 38, 29 ayes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bills 4, House Bill 12, House Bill 17, and House Bill 38 have passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Kraft.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 82. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 82, Interstate Sales of Health Insurance, sponsored by the Labor Committee, an act relating to health insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 82 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 82, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 6 after line 5.
Senator.
Madam Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Madam Chairman, this is the bill to allow interstate sales of health insurance products designed to save us some money. I want to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment before I get into the details of the bill. Madam Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment basically does two things. On page 6, there is a disclaimer trying to warn people that this is a policy from out of state and it may have different protections in it and whatnot. There was a recommendation committee that we insert a heading. There were several alternatives offered, Madam Chairman, and Madam Chairman, we were getting to move one of them, and the female caucus in the committee informed us very forcefully which one we were going to do, and the rest of us yielded to superior force and adopted their recommendation, and that's what you see here. Madam Chairman, let the record show that the men on Committee 10 know what's good for them, and will obey orders when issued.
Duly noted.
And so the heading is to the word warning. That's what the committee voted on. And, Madam Chairman, on page 7, there was a provision on lines 5 through 10. Frankly, I think this was ultimately derived from somebody's model bill, and it was dealing in states that are much more expansive, shall we say, in their regulations. In Wyoming were and some of the benefits in some states are specifically defined. We don't do that, so we decided this paragraph was simply unnecessary verbiage and a complication likely to cause confusion. And we removed that and some similar provisions on page 17, lines 15 through 17. Madam Chairman, that's the Standing Committee Amendment. I would be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. A Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, the sale of insurance across state lines has been a part of the standard, I guess I'd call it conservative, recommendations for reform of our health insurance system. Madam Chairman, we passed one approach, the recommendation of a former speaker a few years ago that allowed the insurance commissioner to go out and negotiate deals with other insurance commissioners. The effort by the then insurance commissioner was somewhat perfunctory, but he did write a letter to other states, didn't get any interest. And I think, Madam Chairman, one of the reasons was that at the time we passed that approach, it looked like the national reform proposals in the Congress were going to fail, and they passed. After we went home, they passed somewhat unexpectedly. You all will recall the ins and outs of that, and the insurance commissioners got overwhelmed. They could see that there was a lot of work heading at them in connection with that thing. And so that approach didn't yield any results and any interest. This bill brings you an approach that was brought by another speaker of the House that I think is fairly creative. You say, well, we won't wait for the others. We'll let policies from other states come in here. What happened in the budget session was that, I believe it was the budget session, the bill that came to us from the House, fundamentally, Speaker, the proponent had not done their homework and couldn't answer some of the fundamental questions. So we put it to interim study and bring you back this particular bill. And, Madam Chairman, I will represent to you that I think the bill will do some good in two aspects. It really is designed to hit three aspects. One of them is where a state has a lot of mandates, this is a way to get them around them rather than to fight every special interest that got the mandate in the first place, trying to get it back out. You import policy from a state that doesn't have those. Madam Chairman, we're the state that doesn't have those. So it won't do us a lot of good in that respect. It does potentially, Madam Chairman, bring more competition into Wyoming. That's always a good thing if you're trying to hold prices down. The other thing it does is if enough states adopt this kind of language, this kind of procedure, I think it may lead to a system whereby right now each state has to approve the policy forms for each health insurance company, and you have to get them approved separately in each state. The states are getting increasingly common approaches to that. The reason for the approval is to prevent so many fraudulent fine print exceptions that you don't have anything. It's an important thing because you get trouble if you don't have that. But increasingly, I think the states have the potential for developing a system where that's done once and the other states can accept it. I think that may save some administrative costs. The heart of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is the requirements starting at the bottom of page 2, where the insurance commissioner will approve them. Subject to the following, we're going to approve their policy forms. If another state has already approved them, the company is authorized to transact business in this state. And, Madam Chairman, the testimony in committee was that almost all the companies are very common for insurance company to want to be licensed in all 50 states. So that proves not to be a big obstacle. It does mean we can get at them if we need to. The insurer One of the questions before that caused the bill to fail in your Senate Labor Committee was that it wasn't clear if you had a dispute between the policyholder and the insurer as to payment of claims, who resolved that dispute. This bill says that the insurer's got to agree that we'll resolve it, but we'll use the rules from the state that issued the policy. So you're importing their rules, except that if you get an appeal, that goes through the Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act and goes to our courts. So that gives a clear who's responsible for resolving those things. And a key provision on the top of page 4, lines 4 through 6, insurer shall inform the commissioner whether the policy be priced as it is in the other state or at a Wyoming-specific price. Madam Chairman, that's just asking for information. But one of the things we have found, Madam Chairman, is a lot of people are under the illusion that when we import the policy from another state, we'll import the price from another state. And I think we will find that that's not, this allows that, but I think we'll find that's not how the marketplace works. You'll get, if you're in Wyoming, you'll get a Wyoming price because, Madam Chairman, health care costs more in Wyoming than it does elsewhere. For some fundamental reasons. Medicare discriminates against Wyoming more than it does against other states, so we have a greater cost shift from our providers, particularly our hospitals, to pay for the Medicare discrimination. That's a hidden tax that each one of us pays. Second, we're short of providers, so the network discount arrangements that work in other states to hold the prices down don't work here. You go to a Wyoming provider typically and say, you join our network and give us a discount, you'll bring more business. Our doctors say, what part of no don't you understand? We got plenty of business, no discount. So that doesn't work here as much as it does in other states where there are more of them and they're hungrier. And then we have the costs of our tort liability system, where this state has no tort reform and other states do. And there's some other complications, too. Basically, Madam Chairman, what it means is you can't get out of paying Wyoming prices because Wyoming costs are higher, and the insurance companies weren't born yesterday, and they aren't going to sell a policy below cost. So that's important to understand with this. They've got to comply with the small group requirements. That's no problem. Those are now federal anyhow. Commissioner, to review the network. That's very important. That's going to be a major issue going forward because increasingly insurance companies are going to be using networks. And you buy a Colorado policy, you got to watch out you don't get just a Colorado network. And that might work for some people, but particularly if you're in the middle of the state, yeah, you'd get a cheap deal, but you couldn't use it. It'd be difficult to use. So that's very important, and we don't want one that whose network provisions are so onerous that it simply won't work in Wyoming. So that provision is important. That's I think the key provisions here. There's some other ones just in the mechanics of things. The disclaimer we talked about in the Standing Committee Amendment, standard provision on rules, and when the thing starts. That's basically the bill. Madam Chairman, be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Discussion on the bill? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just some discussion, and there's been a lot of, I know, dialogue going on nationally about allowing it from a federal level, the sale of insurance across state lines, And that's an issue that I know one of our senior senators tried to get through Congress, has not been able to do that. How does that relate to what we're doing here, or is there any relationship?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, one of the ways to get the nationals to move is to get a bunch of the states doing it anyhow. And this approach would accommodate that. So would the approach we put in our statutes in 2010, which was we can form an agreement with other state insurance commissioners. And basically, the national effort has been stalled because the national reform that was enacted took a different approach. And frankly, part of the effort behind the interstate sales was to get around the mandates that were viewed as one of the cost reasons for high costs. What the national reform did was adopt most of those mandates and made them uniform. So all of us are going to experience those higher costs, whether we like it or not, due to the national reform. And this is no longer a mechanism for evading that because the feds did it to us.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I find it a little ironic that we're doing this in light of some of the other industries in Wyoming, which we've worked really hard to try to keep the outsiders outside. I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about during the interim testimony from some of our insurance folks here in the state of Wyoming and what this might do to them. And I understand that the cost of health care here in Wyoming is a driver, but I wonder if there was any discussion about broadening the risk pool. And so if you do, that could drive the price from out-of-state policies down enough that it could have an impact on our in-state providers. And so I guess I'd just like a little bit more information about that if there was that discussion. Thanks.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I will represent to you that from what we heard in the interim committee and what I've heard informally, the in-state insurers, who I presume was what you're talking about, do not like the concept because it might mean more competition. Well, competition is good for us, makes us more efficient, something to be encouraged. But frankly, Madam Chairman, the opposition was somewhat muted because I think they think that the Wyoming healthcare environment is difficult enough so that not many out-of-state companies under current circumstances will be wanting to come in, and the places where they're likely to see competition is in this southeast corner where Fort Collins is close enough to compete with Cheyenne. You know, they have a very high-class hospital down there. They have pretty good tort reform in Colorado. They're in a position to undercut the Cheyenne providers a bit, and they're already doing so. And you may have competition in Goshen County because Scott's Bluff's so close. And again, Nebraska has more effective tort reform. Scott's Bluff is a bigger community. It's a natural referral place, and quite a number of people already get their health care there. Those are the places where they most likely to see competition this bill might encourage. And I think it's only marginally different from what they're already experiencing, Madam Chairman. And our thought in Committee 10 was let's pass this bill. It may prove to be eventually part of a national effort. It may eventually lead to some administrative cost savings in the common policy forms. But I don't think in the short term, Madam Chairman, frankly, in the short term, everybody is so overwhelmed with getting ready for the 2014 date in the national reform that I don't think we're going to see much activity in the near term.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I would like a little more conversation in regard to risk pools. I know you said earlier in your comments that it was an illusion on the part of many that this would lower health care costs. And some perhaps would purport, or others might have the illusion, that the Wyoming risk pool, and we know the nature of the Wyoming risk pool, and you've already talked about the higher costs in Wyoming, some might have the illusion that if you were to enroll in an out-of-state company, that somehow that would, you would roll under the standards of a much larger risk pool. And isn't that a fact, an illusion, that if you enrolled in a company that was from a much larger state, they would still govern under what would be a Wyoming standard for the risk pool that we have?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, let me see if I can explain the statistical concepts involved adequately. What a larger risk pool does, Madam Chairman, for you, more people in it, you're more likely to get a result that is what statistically you would predict you're going to get. A large risk pool, if you have a few unusual cases, you have bad luck, and you have unusual cases. A large risk pool submerges those, and they don't have as big a statistical effect as they do in a small risk pool. You have a risk pool, say, compare a risk pool of 100 with a risk pool of 1,000. You have the risk, you'll get two or three bad cases, and they might be in your risk pool of 100, in which case your costs will be radically different than what you expect. If you have those same two or three cases, and yeah, it's in that group of 100, but it's part of a group of 1,000, it doesn't have as much effect. So you probably don't have to collect, Madam Chairman, quite as large a risk premium as you get to a larger pool. The difficulty is that you don't really change what your expectation is with a larger pool because you're still dependent on the expected underlying cost, and the trouble is that the underlying cost is known to be higher in Wyoming. So you don't get much benefit from going to a larger risk pool. It does not cut your total cost down in any significant way. That's dependent on what the local costs really are. And you're going to have the same rate of, you know, cancer and heart attacks and all that sort of thing, whether you're in Wyoming, Madam Chairman, or in Colorado. It's just more expensive to take care of them here in Wyoming. And that will be reflected in the rates they charge you.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 82, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 82 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 2, Election Code Revisions, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to elections. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 2, Election Code Revisions. For an explanation of this House bill, I would yield to the good Senator from Laramie County, who's a member of that caucus that Senator Scott spoke about earlier.
The very powerful Women's Caucus, Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 2 came to corporations at the request of the Office of the Secretary of State, in order to bring our statute into compliance with changes that have been made in federal regulations and also to remove some archaic language. So if you will look on page 2 of the bill, line 3 was deleted in order to remove the archaic language. This has been in effect for more than 2 years now, so that line is no longer necessary. Line 8, paragraph D, was dictated by the 2002 Help America Vote Act and then had some changes in the 2009 MOVE Act, which was the Military Overseas Voter Empowerment. And that changed the elections from 2 election cycles to just 1 election cycle when using the federal postcard application. That change was made because most military people move more often than the span of 2 elections. And so it reduced it to just 1 election. On page 3, line 11, this is a new section to make the requirement for petitions circulated by independent candidates to be the same as that required for those within political parties. Line 16, spoiled ballots, directs what can be done if a person spoils a paper ballot and needs to have it replaced. The language that is there now conforms with 22-13-107. On page 4, the added section was on line 8. No ballot determined to be valid by the canvassing board shall be rejected solely due to an administrative error of not initialing the ballot. There has been a case where an election official neglected to initial the ballot, and that ballot was ruled invalid, and that will no longer happen. And that is really the only administrative action that occurs, so that ballots will no longer be invalidated because of the error to initialize. On line 12, it begins the process for how we fill vacancies within our U.S. Congress. Previously, it said that a special election shall not occur more than 40 days after the vacancy, and that put us out of compliance with federal requirements for the Uniform Code for military voters. And so it was changed to 55 days so that we're back in compliance there. Page 5, this erased the date on line 8 after December 31st, 2009. This was the statute was passed in 2008, so initially it needed that effective date, but since we're now past 2009, that date is no longer needed, and that's true on line 12 and also in language that is now erased, lines 15 and 16, since that date is well past. And then lines 18 through 28 were also erased because they are now filed electronically, and that date of December 31st, 2009 has passed, so it's no longer needed in the statute. With that, Madam Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Questions? Discussion on the bill? Senator Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have some questions on 22-25107, where statements to be filed. In the old system, you could fax stuff in if you followed up with the original signed. This says specifically it has to be filed electronically. Now, I'm not saying that that's not the age we're living in. It is. But I found it most difficult this last election cycle to file electronically. It turned into a 2 to 3 hour production for me. I had help, so, I mean, you know I'm not very good at this stuff, but I had some serious help that knew what they were doing. And so I just want you to know that I think that the option to file by paper should still exist out there. What was the discussion why you went solely to electronic?
Madam Chairman. Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to duck that question if I could, actually. I don't believe that fax filing or paper filing is precluded. So I'd like to get back to the Senate with an answer. I don't think that we took that out of there. So I think everybody just felt that it encompassed everything, but I understand the point. And if any other committee member remembers that from the interim, I don't. But I don't believe it's precluded, and I'll get an answer for the good senator.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, a few years ago, we made the mistake of going to an all-electronic filing requirement. Frankly, I think it was a mistake. I had the same difficulty with the filings. The system is slow and difficult to use. Depends a little on the speed with which you've got at home to access the thing, but it is slow and difficult to use. I'd love to go back to the paper filing system, or at least have that as an option, but we went the other way, and this bill is just cleaning that up. Whether it would be a germane amendment to the bill to allow paper filing option or not, that would be something you would need to explore with the attorneys for second reading. This bill was just trying to clean up a piece that had been missed in that respect.
Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 2. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill Number 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 3, Effective Financing Statements Duration, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to Uniform Commercial Code.
You have heard the reading of the bill.
I've got the... It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 3, Effective Financing Statements Duration. And the senator that I was going to yield to had asked if he could file his testimony electronically, and I said he could not, so I think we'll yield to the tall senator for Natrona County.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, that was a slanderous remark. Madam Chairman, in all seriousness, what this does is a financing statement. When you buy a piece of equipment or car, something like that, one of the things you'll have to sign if you're buying it on time, buying it with borrowed money, you have to sign a financing statement. And that gets filed with either the Secretary of State or the county clerk, depending on exactly what it is. There's very clear rules as to where the lender files that. And having that statement there, then if you missed payments, gives them the right to come after the asset that you barred against. And what's happened, Madam Chairman, is frankly the quality of our manufactured goods has gone up a lot. Now, I can remember in my parents' day when if you got 50,000 miles out of a vehicle, you're doing pretty well. And it might be time to get a new one. Now we run 150,000, 200,000 miles. A Swather, I think the last time we bought one of those things, it was financed for 7 years. Okay. You finance something for 7 years, Madam Chairman, which I understand is becoming increasingly frequent. Under the current system, to keep their security interest, the lender has to go through the paperwork of filing a continuation for the next however many years they need, up to another 5 years. And that's an expensive and really unnecessary paperwork burden. So what this is proposing to do is say the initial one is good for 10 years. And it's just a reflection, Madam Chairman, of the improvement in the quality of the manufacturing processes that you can borrow for such a long period of time. It may also be a reflection of the extent to which we're operating on borrowed money as a society. And it just makes all kinds of sense to file that once and not have the continuation again. Not having the continuation does cut the county revenues in particular from these fees, which I think are $5 a crack, down a bit. But the whole county fee system is under review in another bill, so we don't need to get into that here, Madam Chairman. The real controversy in this is we're dealing here with the UCC, and it's uniform. And we're adopting a non-uniform provision. And I think that's a good idea, because you have to have some motivation in the uniform things to bring them up to date. We take the lead in this. It will save money for our bankers. It's not really a trap for the unwary, because the only way they get in trouble is that they assume that Nebraska's law is the same as Wyoming, which it won't be if this passes. But it'll save money for us here within the state. And I think, Madam Chairman, we'll give the Uniform Law Commissioners a push that they need to revise this and make the 10-year standard the uniform one. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Questions? Discussion on the bill? Seeing none, hearing the question. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 9, Election Code Revisions 2, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This electronic filing of House Bill Number 9, Election Code Revisions 2, would be something that I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation, Madam Chairman, and I would yield to the good senator from the non-electronically challenged Campbell County.
Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, This bill is an election code revision, and we have two of them because we were so prompt last year in our interim work. We got one of them all done, and then the Secretary of State had a couple or three other things that came forward later in the year, so we ended up with two bills. This is quite simple. It's just updating our statutes to what is actually being done. On page 2, the first change on line 7 through 10 there, it states that squares for the purpose of this code shall include a box or an oval. They're doing away with the circle, arrow, or other distinguished areas. Then you go to page 3. Currently, the judges and members of the counting board shall be paid not less than $5, no more than $25, and so we're changing that to they shall be paid not less than $10 as determined by the county commissioners for attending the school. Then as you move on down the page there on line 15, 16, and 17, they're changing to confirm with what they have done in posting instructions in the polls. They shall be posted only once rather than three times in each polling box and once on the ballot, in the ballot area, with a sample ballot, rather than three times. Then as you move down, when they're counting paper ballots, they shall be entered on a list, not a tally list, which is virtually can be the same thing, but delete tally. And the next part is where we're deleting and changing. In the old statute, they had a requirement that as you was counting them, you marked 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you put a diagonal line through them, which many of us still use as we're counting numbers. But they have asked that be changed, and they don't have to follow that line. Then on page 4, when they're tallying ballots, we're eliminating the part that each ballot contained in separate ballot box shall be counted and tallied separately. The way they do it now is mainly with machines, but they're all tallied together. Then the repealers in section 2 on line 16 and 17 has to do with the arcade voting machines that we no longer use, and all three of them have to do with the old voting machines, as I understand them, the ones with a levy that you pulled with your hands, and they are no longer used in Wyoming. If there's any questions on these updates, I'll try to answer them. If not, I ask for your support.
Questions? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. This might be a question more for the Chairman of the Corporations Committee, and it deals with that unique situation we had in Fremont County where, because of the confusion between single-member districts with the county commissioners, single-member districts with the legislative races, city council races, all of the above, they made an honest error, and the number of votes made a difference in who would have been elected to the county commissioner. And as I recall, our county clerk made the decision that you should have a re-election, which I think was right. But what she did when she made that decision, the number of votes would not have affected the third person on the ballot. They would have not made a difference in whether or not that person would have been elected, but it made a difference on the top two. She did not bring the third one on, and there was some discussion about, well, they should have brought that third person on because of the deficiency. Did you get into any discussion to try to rectify that situation, or do you think the current statute would take care of it?
Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We did not address that in the course of the committee. I know exactly what you're referring to. We did not take that issue up, and the clerks did not bring that to us. This bill was brought by the clerks. I think the feeling is how that was handled in Fremont County was appropriate. There is controversy about it, but I would suggest it might be a subject perhaps for the interim work. We are, Madam Chairman, we've been
We're proposing to do more election code revisions during the interim. It's probably going to be a little bit bigger of an effort than we've done the past couple of years. So.
Further discussion on the bill? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill Number 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 14. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 14, Crime Victims Compensation and Restitution. Sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to crime victims' compensation. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I recommend it will do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 14, Crime Victims Compensation and Restitution. And for a discussion of this bill, I yield to Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for your favorable vote on House Bill Number 14, Crime Victims Compensation and Restitution. This bill was brought to us by the Victims Assistance Office. And as it states in the enacting clause, it talks about modifying probation and subrogation provisions to include long-term care, restitution. It's basically a bill that wants to clean up some language. For whatever reason, Sections 7-9-113 and Section 7-9-114 and 7-9-115 were not included in the past, and this bill basically seeks to include those provisions and give some guidance in terms of restitution for those situations that that require where a victim has been severely damaged and it calls for long-term care. And you could look at some of those provisions in your statutes in terms of what constitutes long-term care. Anything, it basically states that if the victim has suffered physical injury as a result of the crime, which is reasonably probable to require or has required long-term physical health care for more than 3 months. So this is an attempt to look at those situations where the injury has been pretty severe and calls for long-term care restitution, and also has some provisions for the court to modify those orders if it deems appropriate. And that's basically the gist of this bill, Madam Chair. I'll try to answer any questions that that the body might have. Otherwise, I'll ask for your favorable support.
Discussion on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 14, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 14 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 20, Child Support Guideline Table, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to child support. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 20, Child Support Guideline tables. And for an explanation of this bill, I yield to Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, House Bill 20, Child Support Guideline Tables, is a result of a federal government requirement that child support enforcement program of each state be reviewed every 4 years. It's part of the Child Support Presumptive Guidelines. And so it's called the Quadrennial Child Support Review. And it's under Wyoming Statute 22306. Madam Chair, what the state did is basically the same thing. These guidelines were from 2012. They went to the same expert from the state south of us who had done the same guidelines, who had done the guidelines in 2008 and 2004 before that. And these are the figures they came up with. And if you look at the bill, for instance, page 2, at the bottom of page 2, those are the current guidelines and statute. And then you look at the top of page 3, these are the new guidelines as proposed. And you see them for one child, two children, three children, etc. They used a method in calculating the cost of raising a child, and they changed the method a little bit. Instead of going on the cost of large one-time expenditures like a house or a car, they changed the methodology a little bit to what the monthly cost for paying for the car or paying for the house would be. And as a result, you see the figures that you see. And the way they came out was that there was a slight decrease for payments for lower-income parents and a slight increase for higher-income parents. That kind of concerned me in the interim when we were looking at that. It turns out that there's a term of art called the right-sized orders. And this is a study, an economic study, that finds that in right-sized orders, the non-custodial parent has a higher percentage of paying. So in this case, if the payments are a little bit lower, the non-custodial parent, there's a larger percentage of those payments are made. And so more of the children are actually getting the payments than would be getting paid otherwise. And that the fact that they'll be paying the highest amount. So an example of how this works, and it is kind of complex, it's actually a more complex model than just looking at it. So the example that I've chosen is on page 3, line 3. And you'll see that there's an income of $2,961. Madam Chair, that is the combined income of both the custodial parent and the non-custodial parent. So let's say the custodial parent in this case is the mother, and she makes $1,000 a month, and the non-custodial parent, the father, makes $1,961 a month. So the total amount of income that you see there is $2,961 a month. Because the custodial parent's making the $1,000 and the non-custodial parent is making the $1,900, he's making 66% of the total figure there. So his payments would be 66% of the figure you see over to the right on the third column. That's $637. Plus, it'd be 14.3% for any amount over that. So, Madam Chair, as I said, it's basically a mathematical function, and the Department of Family Services Child Support Enforcement is more than capable of doing this. They've been doing it for years, and they're very good at it. That is all this table is all a recommendation that's made to the judge in divorce cases when it comes to child support. The judge can actually pretty much do anything they want, but this is the recommendation that's made to them. And then the judge takes other factors into account, and the reason that he may deviate off that is on Wyoming Statute 22307. And if I can just go through a quick list of that, it would be the age of the child, the cost of the necessary child daycare, any special health care or educational needs of the child, the responsibility of either parent for the support of other children other than court ordered or otherwise, the value of services contributed by either parent, cost of transportation of the child to and from visitation,
any expenses reasonably related to the mother's pregnancy or confinement for that child. For instance, the parents were never married or divorced prior to the birth of the child. The ability of either or both parents to furnish health, dental, and vision insurance through employment benefits. So that is calculated in there. The amount of time the child spends with each parent and any other necessary expenses for the benefit of the child. Whether the child, whether either parent is voluntarily unemployed or underemployed, and whether or not either parent has violated any provision of the divorce decree or other factors deemed relevant by the court. So it gives the judge pretty much a wide swath, but it also, I think, gives him a pretty comprehensive guide to this in the state of Wyoming. And, Madam Chair, I would be glad to entertain any questions about this.
Questions? Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, two questions. One, with you've got a bunch of existing child support orders out there that are based on the old table. How does this one, which is slightly different, phase in, and what effect does it have on those old orders? And second, Madam Chairman, and I think more importantly, where you've got a circumstance where the either parent, or particularly the parent who is paying the child support, they lose their job, they change jobs, they get a worse job, they get a better job, and the child support becomes a different burden for them, a greater burden. My experience is it's extraordinarily expensive and difficult for some of these parents to get that order modified. What is the procedure? Does it have to be a court proceeding? Because I think we have a problem in getting these things modified as circumstances change, as they do in our modern economy.
President Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of things. One, to follow on with the good senator from Sheridan said about how the court can deviate from child support guidelines. That is only true if there is no means-tested benefits attributed to the children. If, in fact, there are means-tested benefits, by law, the court must impose the guideline child support. With regard to your question, child support is modifiable every 6 months, and child support services here in Cheyenne, or your child support, or the division headed up by Brenda Little, Child Support Enforcement, they review those things. Now, depending how your divorce or your paternity case or whatever is structured based on your income. You can file with the department for $25 a 4D, which is a section of the Social Security Act, application for $25, and they'll review it, your child support for you, and they'll do that for you. Now, sometimes that takes a little while because there's a lot. First of all your means-tested cases are all 4D automatically. Many of your divorces are not 4D, but you can, with a $25 filing fee, make it a fee to the Child Support Enforcement Services. You can get a 4D status, and they can collect it for you. And then they go through, and they have all the employer records, the whole nine yards, and they can actually, in many circumstances, do it without actually having to go to court. Sometimes what we find, though, is that because of the vast amount of these things that are out there, that it may be more cost effective for the custodial parent to get a lawyer and just go do it. And in those kinds of cases, the court, in any divorce case or paternity case, particularly divorce cases, the court can assess attorney's fees. So I hope that answers your question.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I thank the President for answering the question in his knowledge in this area is much greater than and deeper than mine. And I also apologize for a misstatement. I said a judge can do anything he wants. I did not mean that. He can alter these guidelines within the provisions of 22307. That's all those conditions that I read. So it does give the judge quite a bit of leeway as long as he can cite some of the factors within 22307.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, the one piece of my question that I didn't hear an answer to was, do these guidelines, where you've got an existing child support order under the old guidelines, do these guidelines automatically modify that, or do you need to proceed?
President Ross.
Madam Chairman, the order is the order until it's modified. So, but because child support is reviewable every 6 months, then you go to the test, and the test would be, does child support modify by 20% or more? And if it does, it automatically is a presumed change of circumstances for the court to grant a change in the upward or downward in child support calculation.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 23. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 23, Juvenile Parole Eligibility, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hickson, Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I move it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 23, Juvenile Parole Eligibility. Madam Chairman, what this bill does, as a result of a couple Supreme Court decisions, what we're doing is modifying the sentencing structure for people under the age of 18 who commit serious who commit murder. Basically, it's pretty straightforward. Going in on the top of page 2, and what we're in is Wyoming Statute 62101, murder in the first degree. We're talking about the penalty. A person convicted first degree shall be punished by death, life imprisonment without parole, or life imprisonment according to law, except that, and the new wording will read, a person convicted of murder in the first degree who was under the age of 18 years at the time of the offense shall be punished by life imprisonment. In other words, we're eliminating the possibility of the death penalty or life without parole. That's what it does. That's what the bill does. Going on under Wyoming Statute 62306, and I'm on page 2, we're talking about the sexual abuse in this one. We go down to page 2, line 17, and we add the words, in which convictions were for offenses committed after the actor reached the age of 18 years of age. What that does is, if they're convicted of sexual assault, we can only use those severe penalties if they committed the crime after they reached the age of 18. Going on, sexual assault in second degree, and that's on the top of page 3. On lines 7 and 8, the same language is inserted. A habitual criminal under 610-201. This is the three convictions law on page 3, lines 16 and 17, the offenses have to be committed after the person reaches the, have to be 19 years old, basically, to do it. Starting on the bottom of page 3, life imprisonment without parole and life imprisonment, we go in and modify that. And really the big modification is over on the top of page 4, in line, starting lines 4. A person sentenced to life imprisonment for an offense committed after the person reached the age of 18 years is not eligible for parole unless the governor has commuted the person's sentence to a term of years. It goes on, and this again is the new language, starting on page 8. A person sentenced to life imprisonment for an offense committed before the person reached the age of 18 shall be eligible for parole after commutation of his sentence to a term of years or after having served 25 years of incarceration, except, and I'm on line 13, and here's where we tighten it down a little bit, except if the person committed any of the acts specified in 713-402, after having reached the age of 18, the person shall not be eligible for parole. And what that carves out is if the person is convicted of assault of an officer while they're incarcerated or attempted escape. And we're saying if you do those two things, then you're probably going to have to stay in prison. Okay, and then over on the top of page 5, the board may also grant, on lines 3 and 4, the board may also grant parole to a person serving a sentence for an offense committed before the person reached the age of 18 years as provided in 610-301C. Madam Chairman, what this does, it puts us in conformity with the Supreme Court decisions. We go a little bit further perhaps than the court required in that we say it's the 25 years. I think the thinking of this state is after you've been incarcerated for 25 years, you're not the same person you were when you were 16 or 17. We're saying that you're going to be eligible to be let out of prison. Doesn't mean you will. Doesn't mean the parole board has to let you go, but at least you're going to be eligible. And that's the long and short of it. It's about 25 years long or maybe a little shorter.
Discussion on the bill.
Question.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm a little bit confused. We just asked for some clarification. Why are we putting statutes related to persons over the age of 18 for offenses committed after the age of 18? Why are those in the juvenile statute section?
Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, I'm not sure where 6 is crimes against the state, and 7 is the parole powers. I'm not sure where my colleague is referring to.
Senator Nutting.
Madam Chairman, on page 2, the newly added lines 18 and 19, it says convictions were for offenses committed after the age of 18 years of age.
I'm sorry, and I apologize. I wasn't quite tracking with you.
Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, the reason we do that, we're going into the criminal code and saying these are the sentences. However, we're carving out persons who committed that crime prior to when they turned 18. Before this, they fell under our criminal code. And we're saying, no, they don't. They're a special category. And that seemed to be the most efficient way to do it.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill Number 23 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 28. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 28, Disabled Hunter Programs, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, reports with back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, excuse Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 28, Disabled Hunter Program. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good Senator Barnard.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I bring to you a very interesting bill and a bill that will help a number of people in this state that have some severe disabilities. This bill, if you read the catch title, it says it provides for the use of artificial lighting devices by people with visual disabilities. It provides for additional antelope licenses for disabled hunters, and it repeals the restrictions on disabled hunter companions, and it also expands the use of artificial lighting to hunt predators. On the very first page, page 2, this bill will take and expand the 30 antelope that are available for disabled hunters to 50 antelope. The testimony from Game and Fish said this will not affect the hunting at all. It will be a negligible change. These people that apply for these licenses still will pay a fee for those licenses. These licenses won't be free for them. And if you read down on page 2, it says no person shall take any kind of wildlife with the aid of or using any artificial light except, and this is the change in the law here, a public officer authorized to and conducting predator control. So you can use these artificial lights for predator control. You can. Another change is here is that a landowner or a resident manager with a landowner's permit or a resident manager's permit may take predators on their land using this artificial light. And I'm sure you're all familiar. Well, then the last part says that on page 3, Romanet 3, it enables people with central visual acuities to take these animals. I'm sure you're all familiar with laser pointers on rifles and on pistols. They can be used on bow and arrows and crossbows also. When you have one of these laser pointers, your speed and your accuracy in shooting can be very much helped. And these laser tracking devices or these laser hunting devices can extend your view out thousands of yards. They're very, very effective. And because of that, it kind of makes it unfair to the animals compared with a rifle with a scope, and so they're not legal now. I'm sure you all watched Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the alien and have those little red things and put it on your head. Yeah, they're really effective. As to the definition of a visual central visual acuity, last week the Optometric Association gave you some little cards. On there they had macular degeneration, cataracts, and diabetic retinopathy. To make this really brief, when you look at something, the light passes first through your cornea, then it goes through your anterior chamber, then it goes through your pupil, then it goes through your lens, then it goes through your aqueous humor, and finally the light lands on the retina. If there's any kind of damage or the tissues modified in any way, that light and anyone in the path of that light can be disrupted. And depending on the size of the wound, you can both become totally blind, or you can be centrally blinded. From a scar on your cornea, you can be blinded by a cataract on your lens. You can be blinded centrally by blood or debris in the vitreous. And the worst complication here is when you have the retina have a defect in it. There's a saying that you can't fix stupid. Well, you can't fix stupid, and you can't fix retinal problems, because once the retinal is destroyed, it's gone. So these people that have these visual disabilities, especially retinal ones, they've got no hope of ever getting their vision back. So this is a great bill. It makes it so that these people are able to get out in the field and use these artificial devices. Another thing that this act changes is that when you go hunting and you're disabled like that, you can have a companion hunter. The companion hunter goes along with you, and there used to be a limit on this. This takes away the limits on the amount of companion hunters. You can have 5 or 10 companion hunters along with you. The reason they have these companion hunters is to help the person get through the field, and also if they do shoot and they happen to miss and wound the animal, the companion hunters are authorized to take that animal with a gun, okay, with a rifle or a pistol. And I'm not sure on this, Madam Chairman. I'll find out whether they have to use a bow if it's bow hunting or something like that, but I think that they can use a rifle. And there can be as many of these companion hunters as you want. This bill will help to eliminate these people that have visual disabilities from not being able to hunt. It will make it so that the taking of predators on your land will be easier. And I ask you to consider this bill and ask for your favorable condition. And just for your information, I am standing.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, a question on page 3, down your section 2, that repealer, does that have to do with the companion hunter, or just what does that repeal?
Senator Barnard.
Madam Chairman, Senator Hines, I think there was a regulation that said there was just one companion hunter, and now that's expanded to where there's not a limit on it.
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, just so we're clear on that, it's the number of companions a disabled hunter may have, not the number of hunters to a companion. So if somebody's severely disabled, they may need 2 or 3. That particular statute had restricted it to 1.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chairman, I had a question on line 15 and 16, page 2, why we're taking out the aid of artificial light for predator hunting. I know a lot of people that hunt predators use them, whether it's raccoon, foxes, coyotes, wolves, lions, or somebody mentioned snipes also use lights for. But I think we're making a mistake. I don't think that has anything to do with disabilities.
Senator Barnard.
Madam Chairman, I don't think we're taking that away from them. It defines more fully that they can use these artificial things to take predators. Was that your question?
Further discussion on the bill. You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 28. Please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill number 28 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 29. The reading clerk will read the bill. Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, may I privilege the floor?
You may.
Madam Chairman, fellow senators, we've got a great bunch of kids up here from Torrington Trail Elementary. They're here with their teachers, Jennifer Brumell and Heather Kreiling. And I would ask you to help me welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. The reading clerk will read House Bill number 29.
House Bill number 29, Game Licenses, Landowner Owner Coupons, sponsored by the Travel Committee, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, and Kraft. Excuse, Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Madam Chair, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 29, Game Licenses, Landowner Coupons. There are no standing committee amendments. And to give a further explanation of this fine little bill, I ask you to call on the only senator here from the wrong side of the Tetons.
Must be Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. The House Bill 29, this is one of those bills we all dream about. This is a bill that reduces the weight of government regulation on the shoulders of the taxpayer, our citizens. And to go into that, we'll talk a little bit about it. We have this is just a repealer bill. It repeals statute 233105C, which says when an antelope, deer, elk is shown to have been killed on federal or state land, the licensee shall detach, date, and sign the landowner's coupon in mail or otherwise deliver the coupon to the Cheyenne office of the department. What we found out in committee from the Game and Fish was that these coupons, when they are mailed on, which is very rare, they basically get put in a shoebox, left on the shelf for a couple years, and thrown away. And so there's a requirement out there with good intentions. It's rarely complied with, never enforced, and not the information isn't used afterwards. And so this is just a bill to repeal that old statute, reduce some paperwork, cut back on the overall expenses of that great department, and reduce the responsibilities of our citizens. I'd ask your support for this good bill.
Discussion, Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, let me make sure so I don't want to violate the law. Does that mean then that if I have hunters and I do have some federal ground that I lease that's integral to my ranch, I can have those hunters give me the coupons irrespective of where they shot the game? Whether it was on private or, just to help them get, so they don't have to carry it back to wherever they came from. I can ask them to give me all the coupons rather than just the ones on private ground.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Senator, I thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator from KC, let me read the statute again to you. All this does is repeal 233105C. That's all we're doing here. And no more, no less. What you choose to do with that as a landowner, we recognize your rights. So all it says is that the licensee doesn't have to mail these into Cheyenne any longer.
Further discussion on the bill? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 53. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 53, State Land Violation, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to state lands. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move House Bill 52 do pass.
53.
And we also have a standing committee amendment. I'd like that read in.
Would the reading clerk read the amendment?
House Bill 53, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, page 1, line 8.
Madam Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Johnson to explain the bill.
You've moved the amendment. Do we want discussion on the amendment?
Well, I think he has to explain it.
All right. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and my amendment walked away. Does somebody here close have one? Thank you. I could have collected them. Madam Chairman, this is a bill that was brought to us by the State Land Director, and you've had a sheet on your desk for I don't know how many days now. It looks like this. One side of it, you can see that there are some vehicles that were going out and muddying up the land quite a bit. There's a pickup that is chained up, ready to pull out. Then in the second row, again, is off-road driving. And the we have junk debris used for targets, and then they're left. Junk debris left at Coal Mountain parking area. More junk deposited in stock reservoir. On the other side, you see bullets that have been shot at a house, a garage, and a vehicle. I don't know if it's the same vehicles, but you can see two bullet shots there. This is state land. This is what's going on with state land. And currently, any order for restitution for damage done to state lands goes directly to the general fund. So the judge can say $1,000 to clean up, and the state land board doesn't see any of it. And the judges have essentially stopped requiring restitution, requiring them go out and clean up because it takes too many state employees to watch them to do it to make sure that they do it right. So we have here the bill allows for ordered restitution to be deposited in an account designated by the Board of Land Commissioners. And they're to be used by that office to mitigate these damages. The office over there, the land office, believes that this will increase the instance of ordered restitution when judges learn that the money will go directly to mitigating the damages that are done. Now, also in 1988, the legislature passed prohibitions on that state land. And the only violations that are finable right now are building, maintaining, using, or attending an open fire, camping overnight, or driving off roads. That's it. This bill broadens the finable violations to any violation, any lawful order of the board to protect assets from resource damage. Violating any lawful order of the board protecting public health and public safety. And the board would use, and the board employees would use a graduated restriction of public use when these violations are found before complete public use closure is closed. They can go up and say no shooting, no dumping of trash, whatever, all up, and the final order that they can make and they can put on the land is it's closed. Nobody can go on it for anything. However, there are current cases that law enforcement cannot cite for because the violation is simply a board order. That's all, not criminal. The board ordered closure to recreational land for shooting for two parcels very close to Laramie County, right here very close to Cheyenne, because the bullets were going in the houses and the vehicles and other items on the property surrounding that state land. Currently, citations cannot be written for this violation of a board order. There will be no consequences, so it just keeps going on. For the lessees of the state land, this bill exempts those who are holding a valid lease or permit. If those individuals are in violation, the board has the ability to remedy the situation through lease permit terms. So it's a pretty big problem, man. If you had been on the Ag Committee these past years and the state land board comes in with pictures and shows us what's going on all over the state and they're essentially helpless with, they need this power. So I would ask for your I vote on this bill, and I stand ready for questions.
Senator Johnson, would you like to explain the amendment?
Thought I was finished. Okay, line, page one, line eight. Find my bill. There it is. Well, page one, line eight, we're deleting the Romanet 5 and page one, line nine, deleting Romanet 6 and inserting on page one, line nine, creating new paragraphs 6 and 7 instead of 5 and 6. Page 2, lines 21 and 22. Ouch. Is anybody on the committee under remember why we did that?
Senator Geis.
Madam Chairman, well, the Constitution reads, we just deleted that paragraph because you're not allowed no camping overnight on state lands, and we just deleted that line 22 and 21 and 22 because that's in the Constitution that you cannot camp overnight on any state lands unless you're the lessee, and if you have a sheep camp or a cow camp, then that's a little different.
Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I think the explanation is a little simpler than that, just reading it. That's existing statute. They're deleting it from the bill because you don't need it in there because the and really belongs over where it was inserted on page 3, line 3, so it would be resource damage and because you need it at the next to last subparagraph. So the conjunctive applies to all the paragraphs. It's just a correction of a drafting error, and the camping overnight on state land, except that language is in the statute already and will simply remain there and isn't changed.
Further discussion on the amendment.
Three line three
Senator
after
Johnson.
Damage insert and as correction and punctuation.
We are on the amendment. Is there further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, I'm still uncomfortable, and I'm going to ask that we divide this amendment. First division is lines 1 through 7 and lines 11 and 12, and the second division is lines 8, 9, and 10.
It is divisible. Discussion on division 1. Is there discussion on division 1, Senator Schiff? No?
Number 1, I think, is absolutely beautiful.
Any discussion on division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Hearing none, all those in favor of division 1 to Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Division 1 has carried. We're on division 2. Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, my concern is I want to make sure that if you delete the language in this bill, that it does not delete the language in the statute as it's written and constructed today. I think it does delete it because we've changed the bill, actually. And the bill is amending 362107. And the action we're taking is to delete subparagraph 5, camping overnight on state land except in areas established by the board. That goes away when we delete that from the statute. And I think that would not be good policy.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, it would not be good policy, arguably. But, in fact, when you delete existing language in the bill, you'll leave it exactly the same way as it is in the statute. If it was strike and delete, then it would eliminate it. What they're really doing is it's just a simple drafting thing. The and belongs between the next to last subparagraph. And the last one should be at the end of the next to last subparagraph, and they had it in an inappropriate place. So you're getting rid of the new and is all you're doing, and it doesn't change what's in the existing statute. The existing statute remains here. You don't have to add an and to it because you've added two subparagraphs to it. And it goes on, as the first division put it, on page 3, line 3, after damage. Mm-hmm. And that's all it does. I'm not on that committee, but if they'd wanted to repeal that piece, then they'd say strike and delete, and then it would be cause for concern as to whether that was a good idea or not. That's not what they've done.
Further discussion. Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, I think I was hearing something go thump in the night while I was camping overnight on state land. This actually is a wonderful amendment, comparable to the writings of Mark Twain and people of that stature.
Hearing question on division number 2 of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill number 53 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
If you've watched that movie, I move. Did we do the bill already?
No.
Oh, we didn't do the bill.
Could
I got a little excited. Call for the question.
Thank you. The question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 53, please say aye. Those opposed, please say no. House Bill number 53 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Reports from standing committees.
Mr.
February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 7, Corporation Lexington Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 35, Engrossed Search and Rescue Operations, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 32, Elections, Vacancy Appointment Process, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 10, Certificates of Insurance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 122, Engrossed, Alcoholic Beverages Purchases Acceptable Identification. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 81, Engrossed, Large Project Funding, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 49, Legislature Certificate of Attendance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Bebout, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 50, Distribution of Bills, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, and Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Bebout, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 57, Constituent Service Allowance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, and Rothfuss, excuse, Senator Bebout, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 37, Engrossed, Hunting License Raffle, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Byrne, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 7, Sanitary Facilities for Motion Picture Operators, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Driscoll, excuse, Senator Kraft, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 143, Engrossed, Game Road Kill, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye. Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 7th, 2013. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 11, engrossed, Insurance Holding Company System Regulatory Act. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate Joint Resolution 2, the reading clerk will read not only the bill jacket, but the entire bill contents.
There's nothing on there. Senate File Joint Resolution 2, Designation of Nap Time. Sponsored by the entire Senate.
I got it. Okay.
Open it up. Open it up.
Don't show this to my wife. She thinks I'm busy all the time.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I don't want you to take offense of it. Nobody gets by with anybody in this. We just treat you like we treat the rest of us. Welcome to the family.
That's so funny.
Did that clear the desk?
I'll have to find a different place to nap.
Mr. Majority. Mr. Majority Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that we stand in recess until 2 p.m.
You heard the motion. Wait a minute. Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Health, and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment tonight to take up House Bill 108, Engrossed Food Freedom Act, House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, House Bill 117, Administrative Rules Taken Assessment, and House Bill 109, Engrossed Interstate Shipment of State Inspected Meats.
Further announcements? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Friday, February 8th at 8 a.m. And please note, we're going to meet in room 302. And Mr. President, there is a change up in the bills in the batting order. We'll take up first House Bill 221, State Government Fraud Reduction Act Reporting Requirements, will be the first bill we will hear. And the second bill will be House Bill 133, Engrossed Human Trafficking.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in 30 minutes. Rather than 12:30, it'll be 12:45 in room S16 to take up House Bill 175, Engrossed Juvenile Citations, Notification by Law Enforcement.
Further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.